Welcome to Voices,
a podcast from the Institute for Human Rights and Business.
Here, we're seeking to elevate the range of perspectives
on the role of business in the world
and in people's everyday lives.
Hello, everybody. This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business, and I'm here today with two guests, Eric Hagen and Asriya Mohammed. Eric has worked at the Western Sahara Research Watch, which is a Norway-based NGO, which has been keeping an eye on Western Sahara, and he'll tell us why. And Asriya is from a refugee camp of Western Sahara. She grew up in Algeria, and she is now also in Norway and working on the struggle. So the first question, tell us very briefly the story of Western Sahara. Why is it important?
Western Sahara is treated by the United Nations General Assembly as the last unsolved colonial question in Africa. The people of the territory, they have the right to self-determination, but that decolonization process and that right has been stalled and prevented by the neighboring country of Western Sahara, which is Morocco. Morocco occupied this former Spanish colony in the 70s and has prevented the organization of a UN referendum on independence. And the challenge then, of course, is that Morocco is taking advantage of the very rich natural resources of the territory.
Which are what? What are the main resources there?
Some minerals, primarily phosphates for agriculture purposes, for fertilizers, exactly. And the fisheries. Mm-hmm. There's a large, one of the richest fishery stocks in the world, just located offshore Western Sahara. Now, there are several complications to this. One, of course, is that people of Western Sahara do not benefit from this plunder. Second, that it contributes to the undermining of the peace efforts. Morocco is benefiting, therefore, that it's not willing to engage in UN peace talks. And also it gives its sort of international acceptance. It shows some sort of acceptance of the status quo. It shows that the international community couldn't care less about the occupation, the fact that they are signing accords for the plunder of the territory. And, well, our association, Western Sahara Resource Watch, we try to take these resources and this international participation out of the equation so that Morocco becomes more likely to support the UN peace efforts. If we take away these accords for those resources, we think the Sahrawis have a better chance of getting that referendum through.
Asriya, tell me about the life in the camp. How is it and how dire it is and what kind of opportunities do people have? Is there a generation which has grown up only in the camps without education or jobs? What is it like?
I think the conditions we were born there, we are get used to them. So for me, they were not really that extreme. I mean, you are born in the middle of the desert in refugee camps. And as a child, you think this is the life that everyone has. Mm-hmm. You think it's the same what you had in the UK or what other person had in India or in Brazil. But then you come to Norway and you discover, oh my God, we did not have a normal life. The refugee camps, they are located in the middle of the desert, in one of the most isolated places in the world. We are 100% depending on humanitarian aid. It means that everything we need to survive, all the essential things, food, medicine, water distribution, everything is from the humanitarian aid. But what I want people to listen to, it's not really about the condition. As I said, we are born there. We did not know other options. What I want people to know is that this conflict has been since 1975. Mm-hmm. People have been in the middle of the desert over 40 years.
And it's very hot, right? Because it's in the desert. So it's like, you were talking about the temperature. What are the temperatures like?
I mean, especially in the summer, it's extremely hot. It can be like higher than 50 to 55
on
degrees.
On Celsius, yes.
Yes. And in the winter, it could be minus. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the desert, there is also a problem of water. Not only the quantity of water, that is not enough. Normally, the average, each person should have 18 liters. But UNHCR, for example, they only deliver 12 liters per person, which is lower than the international standards. But also the quality of water. Especially when I was a child, a lot of health problems comes from the water.
So tell me about the economic dimension of the conflict, because clearly if you operate in what is regarded as an occupied territory, that is a violation of international law. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And well, how does that play out?
there are two aspects to the Western Sahara conflict. One is that it's a matter of decolonization, meaning that the so-called a non-self-governing territory or a colony. And people of colonies, they have certain rights. So it's a whole colonial legal aspect that is important. And then in addition to that, you have the law of occupation, international humanitarian law. So basically, you have two legal frameworks that companies need to take into account. The body of law is very, very much on the Sahrawi people's side. We have seen in 2016 and 2018, three times the Court of Justice of the European Union have clearly stated that EU-Morocco trade agreements cannot be applied to Western Sahara. And then drawing upon both these sets of law. It's the same done by, we have a very strong case in the court in South Africa, where the South African High Court states that trading with conflict minerals, basically from Western Sahara, is a violation of the principles of international law. The High Court of South Africa detained a vessel of conflict minerals from Western Sahara that stopped over in Port Elizabeth to refuel. This is 2017-18.
Mm-hmm. So very recently.
Very recently. For 1 year, a cargo vessel was detained. And the High Court of South Africa says this is basically stolen goods. So more and more national jurisdictions, and especially legally interested teams of lawyers and organizations, look into the possibility of following up the EU Court of Justice decisions in national jurisdictions, as happened in South Africa. So it's rapidly moving this the legal front of the Sahrawi people. They're taking their independence battle into court rooms. And the companies need to be very careful about this.
Asya, so do you want the companies not to operate in Western Sahara, or do you want to operate with certain rules? And if so, what would you want them to do?
I think each company or any agreement should be first made after the consent, that you have the consent.
So consultant consent, yes.
Of the Sahrawi people. But in the current situation, Western Sahara, while it's still occupied, we do not want international companies in Western Sahara. They make our suffering longer. Morocco use investment not only to make profits, but also, you know, to gain political allies, and also it makes it very difficult for the United Nations to go ahead with the peaceful process. So I'm not saying boycott. All companies are very welcome, and I hope one day when Western Sahara, the political status is clear that they are in Western Sahara. But right now, we the Sahrawis, we don't want any companies. No one asked us, so there is no consent, which is in violation of international law, and the benefits. Sahrawis are the poorest in their own countries. Those that are working are Moroccan settlers. We are in the refugee camps. We do not benefit from this. So my final answer is, yes, I want investments. I'm not against fair trade for all, but it has to be based on the consent and the benefits and the people, the opinion of the Sahrawis.
Eric, question for you. You have been lobbying. You have been investigating companies that operate in Western Sahara. You've been exposing them, naming them, shaming them. What has been the response from companies to that? Do they stop after your exposures? Do they challenge you? Do they ignore you?
Well, many companies involved state that they didn't know they were doing something wrong.
Right.
So the first element is to inform them, excuse me, do you know what you're doing? And some companies, when made aware of where they are, they say, oops, we shouldn't have done this in the first place. That mostly applies to shipping companies with vessels all over the world, and they have suddenly a vessel visiting Western Sahara, and they then realize they shouldn't have done that. So that's the first aspect. When confronting companies, the ones present, still present, many have left, but those still present, they say that they are operating there to the benefit of the local population. Now, the challenge is that this is not a matter for the population. It's a matter for the people. And that's a fundamentally different concept. The people of Western Sahara, half of them live as refugees. The other half live under oppression. The population is something else. The population is majoritarily settlers from Morocco, Morocco armed forces. And the population doesn't even include those who fled. The population of people are very different entities. And companies in Western Sahara, they normally talk about the population, people living in the area where they're operating, and not referring to the owners of the land, anything else. And also they generally ignore the aspect of consent. Did they get the permission to be there? Which the Court of Justice is repeating, the European Court of Justice. Instead, they're referring to how many jobs they have created to the local population, which is interesting, but that's not really the question. The question is who gave them permission to give jobs.
Who is getting the jobs?
That's the other question. Yeah. And that would normally be a majority Moroccans, not Sahrawi. And if it is Sahrawis, it could maybe be a selection, okay, Sahrawis with this and that opinion, you know? Will a person with the wrong opinions get a job? So that's another question. Companies are in general not attentive to the big elephant in the room, or the big question, who gave them the right. And now that consent issue, that's exactly what the South African Court or the European Court of Justice have stressed. The Court of Justice of the EU doesn't mention the word population at all, doesn't mention benefits at all. It says specifically, the important here is to listen to the consent of the people. So it basically ignores totally the European Union's approach, which is the population benefits, which is irrelevant according to the Court of Justice of the EU. It's a very colonialist way of approaching things. This is the way European colonialists talks in the 1880s. We are coming here with our benefits to the populations of Africa. You know, this is how they talked 200 years ago. And after that, we had the creation of international law and the United Nations and decolonization efforts, and let those people decide for themselves how they want to run things. This is not up to the European companies or countries to decide.
And as Asriya points out, the people are not against investment. They are only seeking terms under which they can invest and conditions under which they should invest.
Well, it's up to the people then to decide, okay, it is theoretically possible that her people would accept, under certain conditions, the existence of companies today in Western Sahara, but that's up to them to decide.
Right.
That's not our call. So let them have their say. We struggle then, we observe from distance here, then how these companies or governments involved in the resource plunder Western Sahara claiming to have carried out consultation processes, and it's very frustrating for the people of Western Sahara to observe how these foreign governments or companies claim to have engaged the locals in consultations, while obviously they have not. They have done this through Moroccan lenses, with the Moroccan government, with Moroccan consultancy firms, with Moroccan NGOs or Moroccan maritime institutes, or they're doing the consultancy with totally the wrong people. And that's very frustrating for the Sahrawis to observe.
Yeah, while it's actually possible to consult or to negotiate with a representative of Sahrawi people, the liberation movement in Western Sahara is the one governing the camps, and they are recognized by the United Nations to represent the Sahrawis. So why not just to contact them and have a direct dialogue instead of going to groups which they obviously are in the side of Morocco? So if you are pro referendum or pro the self-determination, they would never have a meeting with you.
And then what you say makes a lot of sense, because this is what companies have to do in any case wherever they operate.
Yeah.
But here the crisis is greater. Thanks very much, both of you. You have a tough task ahead, and all the very best to both of you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Good.